Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 342, March 14th, 2018. George builds a tuner. Hey, good evening, everybody. It is Ham Nation time. It's Wednesday night. It is March 14th, almost St. Patrick's Day, so I'm wearing my lucky St. Patrick's Day shirt. You're going to see a lot of green on the show tonight, I do believe. I know Amanda's wearing green. The other two, well, I'm not so sure. Most of the usual suspects here tonight. Bob Heil is not with us tonight. He's out doing Bob Heil stuff, whatever that is. But the rest of us are here, and we'll do our rootinous tootinous to entertain you. We'll have a solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove. We'll talk about robots and all kinds of other stuff. But first, let's kind of go around the horn and see what's happening just slightly to my north up in Jackson, Mississippi, and George Thomas, W5JDX. How you doing, Chief?
Oh, good evening, Don. Well, you know, I promised that we would enjoy the Rain Ham Fest for you this past weekend. Boy, did we. My first year to go there, and what a great time. A lot of really nice people there, and Tommy and I even ate crawdads.
Good for you. So, yeah, it's yeah. Worth the drive. It is seriously worth the drive. I would have gone, but like I said, I was doing honeydew stuff all day and expected it to rain, and it never did. And then took my wife to the Luke Bryan concert in the Superdome. So we were busy, but good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, as long as I was living vicariously through you. And that was good. I did miss seeing Emmett and Rochelle, though, from Radio Waves. So good people. All right, good. We'll come back and talk to you in a little bit. Amanda will be here at the end of the show for chat room, but we've got her now with her green. What the hell? What is that on your head?
It is totally a tiara, don't you think? You agree?
Oh,
I think it's
totally
a tiara. It doesn't light up though. I need to add some LEDs to it to make it a little bit flashier. But hello, everyone on Ham Nation. Let's see. I'll be taking your questions on the chat room, and I feel bad for everyone in the Northeast right now. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Well, your electric personality will light up the room anyway. So I think we're all good. And over on the left coast, we have Gordon West, WB6NOA, arguably, or actually not arguably, the person who has probably taught more people ham radio than any other educator on the planet, with his books and courses and tapes and CDs and Lions and Tigers and Bears Oh My. Hello, Gordon. How are you?
Well, I am fine, Don, and thank you for the remembering of my teaching career. It is fun, and we still continue to keep those classes and kids going. And Susie says today is Pi Day, 3.14, and you know the rest, so happy Pi. Happy Green Day for those of you celebrating St. Patrick's Day coming up. And for those of you that have great pets, like what Amanda has, we're going to be talking about pets tonight. And before we do, though, thank you for those that called in and signed in saying that more than 20 watts in the digital modes, such as FT8, is way too much. No, be assured at Quartz Fest, our FT8 operator was down about 5 to 10 watts, and only for a moment in the middle of the night to try and work Italy did he go up to 50 watts, and then he went right back down to 5 to 10. But I appreciate you keeping track of how we operate out on the fly at Quartz Fest, and we'll keep the FT8 power down to 5 to 10 watts, where all digital should be. So let's take a look at our favorite pets, shall we? And I think you'll enjoy this segment of the show, because when people say, what's the very best part of ham radio for you? What's your most favorite piece of gear? It is my pet tracker. Well, this pet was found in a pound. No, not when he was first acquired, but he got loose and there were 8 to 10 pounds around the city. And with a tracker, the owner was able, and the owner was a ham, to track this pal down without having to go into each and every pound. He could sniff it out and hear the tone. So that's good news for that lowly pet. This young lady and her pet, she sometimes will turn right when she should have turned left. And the pet trackers, I'm not sure who's wearing it. Maybe she is, maybe he is. But we were able to quickly find the lost lady and the pet thanks to pet trackers. So now let's take a look at Mr. Q. And Mr. Q went for a ride in the gardener's truck all the way across town. And he would have been a goner, never to be found. But it was his pet tracker. And you see it right below his chin. It weighs about 1/3 of an ounce, including the battery. It transmits for up to 2 or 3 blocks on the ham radio bands. And it is interstitial to the 222 repeater, so you won't hear a cat coming out on your repeater. We can also put these trackers in ham radio HF or VHF gear that's out for a fairgrounds visit. So if someone decides to take the radio home and not bring it back, if they're within a quarter mile, we'll be able to find them. And that's Don, ATN, the mesh man. Don does a great job of really exploring ham radio. And here's what it looked like inside the ICOM transceiver. It didn't disturb the transceiver at all. And that's a little pet transmitter that is sending out 1 milliwatt of output. And the pulse is once a second, but it's only 25 milliseconds long. So it's simply a quick little pulse sound, and we'll let you listen to it. There you go. And they are more proximity detectors. So these are neat little tags. We even have them that are waterproof down to about 3 feet. And this Coast Guard dog got lost on the docks, and they quickly found him. At Quartz Fest, we had folks wanting to try on the pet tracker collars. And I don't know if I have a collar small enough for this little fellow, but he sure was cute. And I bet he could use one, because he escaped right after I put him down. And there's Mr. Wido. And Wido got lost, but we found him a block away, high atop someone's house, hidden in the back. We never would have found him without homing in on his pet tracker. So you think of kids getting into ham radio. Wow, what a great way to get them to tune in and start finding hidden T's. There are 50 channels in that receiver and 50 additional channels for the older legacy pet trackers. And the kids just have a great time picking each one off and finding where it's located. This is the brainchild of Spence Porter, who is a licensed ham with ComSpec. And you remember the ComSpec TE64? That was for those of you not old enough to remember when transceivers didn't have subaudible tone. And you would add the ComSpec board to generate the tone up at the repeater as well. The TE64 was, again, Spence's brainchild. And the different little transmitters are part of his operation called Communications Specialties in Orange, California. And these little transceivers come in a variety of shapes and sizes. This one for the pet trackers, for hams, comes with the little blue second half of the tag. That's the left-hand side, and that's what has the antenna. For non-hams, they've got to stay below about 150 microvolts at 3 meters, so they come without the longer antenna. In fact, they come with just a built-in antenna, and it stays well out of the range of almost anything more than maybe 100 feet further. But for ham radio operators, you attach the antenna, or you can get a longer one. It's up to you as to how you want to configure this. And again, these are little pulses on the 222 band, not in the weak signal portion or the CW portion of the band, but interstitial to repeater outputs. And you may say, oh my gosh, how's that receiver going to differentiate the little tone? Well, the receiver is at 150 dBm for sensitivity, 70 dB at 4 kilohertz, 80 dB down at 10 kilohertz. It's got an 8-pole 10.7 CW filter, MOSFET, 6 helical resonators, TCXO to stay on frequency, as well as an attenuator. And again, these frequencies that you see here have been chosen by Spence and his team, and he's an active ham, and he's active on the 222 band, and you cannot hear this tracker with an FM transceiver. It takes a single sideband receiver or a CW receiver to hear it. Again, the transmitters for the hams put out 1 milliwatt of output, and they pulse every 1 second at 25 millisecond pulse. So it's a very short pulse and it weighs only a third of an ounce. This is the antenna connection that for hams, you can go ahead and add longer and longer antennas to make them more powerful on the ham band. For general users, they'll come with just this. On top of the antenna circuit, and we've turned it upside down, is the connection, gold-plated. And this is all made by ComSpec. And they build these for bald eagles, for tigers, you name it. This drops right into the plastic holder, and that's copper on the outside. It's not wire. And the channel number is right there. So if you forget what channel you got it on, there it is. That's the battery contact. Takes a 2032 battery. And the battery will last for 30 days for those hams setting up their pets or their loved ones or their aged grandmother who sometimes wanders around and goes too far away. Fits right in there, and then the cap screws on. So the pet trackers even found Ms. Moo that went for a walk and found her in a house down the street. And we never would have found her if it hadn't been for the trackers. Now, spectrally, each one is 20 kilohertz separated, and you can have them all in a row or separated at a greater distance. There's a spectrum analyzer looking at the pulses. And again, the pulses are only 25 milliseconds. Here's a pooch with a tracker on, and that was up at Best Friends in Utah. Out at Quartz Fest, many of the hounds had their own pet trackers, and we could see, or actually hear, wherever they were. But most of them were on a leash, didn't go very far. So Spence Porter is doing this for the Wildlife Service and has all sorts of different type of transmitters. He's got more powerful ones for the police department for bugging vehicles. This is Don Arnold's W6GPS Kenwood, the brand new Kenwood transceiver, the D74. And this tunes in the 222 band. And yes, it tunes it in using a CW filter. So we were able to hear the pet tracker fairly well on the Kenwood multi-band transceiver. And that's just because it's multi-mode, being able to tune in to single sideband. Here we see folks doing some testing. This is Communications Emergency Response Team CERT members. They're trying their luck on finding things. Police and fire departments use this, and they're working with one of their favorite pets to keep track of it. And again, this is the receiver. This is the older receiver. It had only 3 levels of attenuation. And we talked to Spence and we said we needed more. It comes with this fold up and fold out Moxon antenna. And the antenna is plenty sensitive and plenty directional to tell that we had a pet actually locked into that cabinet. And it's got an S meter as well, and the S meter's got good AGC action. And It's got a volume control that also doubles as a sensitivity control. Their newer one that you see here is about half as thick, a little bit lighter. And again, this is with a Moxon antenna. It pops right off of the antenna if you want to do a little tea hunting with just a little rubber duck antenna. And again, the Moxon antenna completely collapses. Runs a 9-volt battery to keep that receiver going. And again, the receiver has a MOSFET TCXO, and it has attenuation of 0, 15, 30, 45, and 60 dB. So you can get right up to Fido or Furball and discover exactly which cabinet they accidentally got locked in. And there it is showing signal strength 4. And we're on medium range, so that pet is probably within about 150 feet. And if you got a whole bunch of pets, no problem at all. Just write down their tag numbers and keep track of it. Here we're watching Moosh, a tag by itself, and Susie's wallet. We never have to worry about her losing the wallet in the house. We can always find it. It makes a great sport. So if you've got a favorite pet and it sometimes maybe gets out, or maybe you're in an RV and, oh my gosh, we stopped the RV. Did he accidentally zoom out and we didn't see him? All you have to do is to turn on the transmitter, and if you hear this, that's the ticking. And as it gets, as you get closer, it gets louder and louder with greater signal strength. And finally, our last one was another find. This one went for a long, long walk. And we went around the neighborhood and went around and ran around and finally found him. And now he's back home again, all curled up in coax, where all good animals should go. All right. Thank you, Victor, for rolling the shots. And here is the actual device. It runs a couple $100, about $249 for the receiver. And the individual little transmitters, here they are right here, and there's the antenna connection that, as a ham radio operator on the 222 band, you can go ahead and play games with it, because like anything else on the 222 band that's not going to interfere, you can get a little bit more range by going to a little bit longer antenna element. So that is what comes from ComSpec, and they're in Orange, California. And to look up the full technical details about this, go to sales at, and here it is, thecatlocator.com. Now, if you're not into cats but dogs like Amanda is, that's fine. But you got to use cat to look up the website, sales at thecatlocator.com, and that's ComSpec. And ComSpec is a great pal of ham radio operation, because they engineered the little transmitter that it's not going to interfere on the 222 band. You can hold a transceiver, an FM transceiver, right up to it, and you won't hear a thing. So if you've got a favorite pet, get them tagged. Transmitters are $50. Receiver's about $249 with a Moxon antenna. And when you're through using the setup, the antenna folds down, as you see right here. And now you've got a very compact little pet locator. We use it all the time, especially when we're traveling and we're worried about a pet getting out of the communications van. Well, with this little device, they're not going to get very far. We'll find them. So that's our story. And Don, I know you probably have pets at your end. Plus, you got a very special pet, don't you, that is into robotics?
Yeah, the boy. Well, yeah, we've got a couple of dogs. They don't go too far. We're on 10 acres, so they don't really, they've got plenty of room to roam, so we don't really have to worry about that too much. But yeah, Tyler, I want to tell you about what Tyler did over the weekend. He's in his robotics class. It's Team Chaos 1421, and we've got some images and stuff to show you. They went to Orlando, Florida, to a regional competition. Go ahead and start go through some of those picks, Vic. That's the Team Chaos, commitment to helping advance outreach for STEM. STEM, of course, science, technology, engineering, and math. And that's their team name in the first robotics competition. And just go ahead and thumb through those images real quick. And that was the gameplay area, the arena at Orlando. And they were actually broadcasting that live on the internet. Right there, the first robot you see, the closest one to the fence, 1421, that is their robot that they designed and built and drove. And just very, very cool. There's another shot of their robot in the pits. You can see how big these things are. Pretty amazing technology. The student built, and of course they have mentors from the technical community. And there you can see Team Chaos on the Blue Alliance, 1421 there at the bottom. One of their mentors is someone who works at NASA, the Stennis Space Center. We're so blessed to have Stennis Space Center right in our backyard, and that's their Facebook page. But pull up that first website real quick, and that is the channel that you can actually watch these competitions live. RoboVision OD on demand. They're on YouTube, and you can watch these competitions live as they're going, and also you can watch these competitions. You're going to watch all the replays, and if we pull up the replay of the very final competition that they were in, turn the volume up on this a little bit, too, because there's actual play-by-play on this. It's pretty cool.
This is the Robo Show here live with myself.
All right, here we go, rubber match.
We're here with Dr. Woody Flowers.
So, okay. For the marbles, thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to be here.
59. Thank you.
This is the 20th time
scoring
that we've
on the
had
Switch
a
Bacon
regional for First Robotics.
Scoring on the scale, going for two.
And we're so thankful that you're able to come and join us.
And they get it.
Since its inception.
All right, there you go. I think we got two audio sources going at the same time. They're big, but that's fine. But you can see. You can see the match, and again, Tyler's team is 1421, which you'll see running around there putting blocks up on these balance beams and everything. You can watch this all live as it happens. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And they came in 22 out of 64 teams, and not this weekend, but the weekend following. They're going to be in another regional, and the regional is going to be in New Orleans. So we will be going to watch that live. But I wanted to share a little bit of this. This is so cool. So if your school has a robotics team, by all means, if you have any technical knowledge and want to act as a mentor, volunteer your time as a mentor, they would certainly appreciate it. And I'm sure you would learn some things, too, just from being around these kids. Just amazing. There's 1421 right there putting it on there. So Team Chaos, 1421. Shout out to Tyler N7TMW and his team. Just had the best time watching them compete, and he had a great time in Orlando. So congratulations to Tyler, and good luck in the rest of the season for this this first robotics thing. Very, very good stuff. Wanted to share that with you. Very proud of my son. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week now from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2106, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 14th, 2018. How high can you go when you're activating a summit? In this case, the steep climb doesn't necessarily refer to altitude, but the band itself.
In Australia, the VK1 Association took a summit-to-summit adventure to a higher plane recently by making contacts on 2.4 gigahertz. Yes, that's the 13-centimeter band. In the mountains around Canberra, in Australia's Capital Territory. Three activators accomplished their microwave contacts on March the 1st, Matt, VK1MA on Black Mountain, Andrew, VK1DA on Mount Coree, and Andrew, VK1AD on Mount Taylor. To round out the experience, they were joined by Al, VK1RX, who became the first VK1 operator to be a chaser on 2.4 gigahertz from his home QTH. These are Australia's first three SOTA summit-to-summit contacts on that frequency band. Other summit-to-summit operations were already planned for the 13-centimeter band in the days that followed, this time with five summits involved. When all was said and done, the hams then moved down to 1.2 gigahertz for a bit of a rag chew. It's probably not hard to guess what they talked about. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
The Radio Society of Great Britain has an election coming up, but before hams get to vote, they're going to need some candidates.
What if they held an election and nobody came? Well, that's not quite the situation, but it's getting pretty close. As of the 2nd of March, the Radio Society of Great Britain had received no nominations for its election for the open president's post. The organisation is now re-advertising the post in the hope that some names will be brought forward for candidates to serve the new term that runs from 2018 to 2020. The organization will not go leaderless, however, as the current president, Nick Henwood, G3RWF, has agreed to stay on until something is decided. In fact, the RSGB has posted a video on its website in which Nick talks about the president's role. If you visit the new president's page on the website, you'll find that video and also hear from three former RSGB presidents. So if you know someone who might be a likely candidate, or if you think you might be one yourself, you need to apply before the closing date of the 26th of April. Nominations may be submitted via the RSGB website. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
More Dayton Hamvention plans are falling into place. The Southwest Ohio DX Association has just booked its keynote speaker.
Veteran DXer Gary Dixon, K4MQG, will address attendees at the Southwest Ohio DX Association's 33rd annual DX dinner during this year's Hamvention. The banquet will take place at the Marriott Hotel in Dayton on May 18th. Gary is not just a veteran DXer, but a veteran amateur, having been licensed more than 61 years ago. He's a past president of the International DX Association and has been involved with the group for more than three decades. He is in the CQDX Hall of Fame and a charter member of the Carolina DX Association. He presently serves as the ARRL's DX Advisory Committee representative for the Roanoke Division. The South Carolina resident and his YL Carol, K-A-4-W-U-R, have two sons and a daughter-in-law, all hams. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
Finally, another reminder that the 2018 nominating period for the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is open. You'll find full information and the nominating form on our website, www.arnewsline.org. Just look at the top under the YHOTY tab. For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Stephen Kenford, N8WB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We have some fast solar wind that's hitting Earth right now and causing a solar storm. But is it as big as all the hype? Those stories and more in the news this week. Solar activity has been pretty quiet this week, but the news media sure hasn't. Have you guys been on the internet lately? Apparently there's this massive solar storm that's supposed to hit Earth, but all I see is some fast wind from this coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth's strike zone. As a matter of fact, the fast wind from this coronal hole has hit Earth already. It's bumped us up to active conditions right now, and it may bump us up to storm levels, but minor storm levels over the next day or so. This means we're beginning to see aurora at high latitudes. We might get some aurora down to mid-latitudes, but just for a short while. We are having some HF issues, so you amateur radio operators are dealing with some propagation issues, but you might get some decent aurora propagation on the night side, and GPS is most likely a little bit glitchy here and there. But you're not having the huge power grid issues or any catastrophes that what you've seen on the media, so everybody can relax and rest easy. The storm will be over in a few days, and Earth will go back to business as usual. Switching to your M-flare threat meter, you can see the X-ray flux remains incredibly low. That means the solar flux is also extremely low. In fact, the last time we even popped any C-class flares was back at the beginning of March when region 2701 was still on Earth's side of the sun. Now it's rotated to the sun's backside, and we've got probably about 10 more days before that region rotates back into Earth view. We have a spotless sun on Earth-facing disk right now, so that means your amateur radio operators, your suffering with very poor propagation conditions, and that will continue easily over the next week. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see over the past couple weeks, we've been extremely quiet when it comes to solar storms. We've been sitting at normal to unsettled conditions. In fact, the only time we got any activity was back around the 10th when we had that near stealthy solar storm hit us. It brought us up to active conditions and brought aurora down to mid-latitudes for just a few moments before the aurora retreated back north again. Since then, things have been pretty quiet, but we just got hit by that fast wind. You can see we bumped back up to active conditions, and we may bump up to storm levels here over the next couple days. We could see some sporadic storm conditions, and things will start settling down probably around the weekend. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are in the middle of being hit by that fast wind from that finger-like coronal hole, and we have already bumped up to active conditions. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting minor storm conditions with about a 55% chance of a major storm. At mid-latitudes, we are expecting active conditions, which we've reached, and we have a decent chance of reaching storm conditions, but it'll be sporadic, and it'll be over the next couple days or so. And especially at high latitudes, we could be storming like this maybe in through the weekend before things begin to settle down. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, despite what you may have read in the media, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We have a spotless sun, so that means you GPS operators on the day side, you're probably loving life because everything is so quiet. But you poor amateur radio operators, you're probably hating things on the day side because this means your solar flux is extremely low and you're suffering with poor propagation. Now, on the night side of Earth with the solar storm that's hitting now, you amateur radio operators might like things a bit better. You probably get some sporadic propagation, and you can definitely take advantage of the auroral modes for communication. But you GPS operators need to be a little bit more careful. Even at mid-latitudes, especially near the aurora, your GPS might get a little bit glitchy. So the space weather this week is definitely picking up, maybe not as much as the hype that you might be reading on the internet, but still, we do have some fast wind that's hitting Earth right now, and it has bumped us up to active conditions with a chance of some decent storming conditions. So your aurora photographers, you're already beginning to celebrate. I'm seeing it on the internet with some decent aurora photos, and this storming will continue. It could even bring aurora down to mid-latitudes over the next couple days. Now, you amateur radio operators aren't quite so happy. We've got poor propagation right now on the Earth's day side, and that's because the solar flux is so low. But in about 7 to 10 days, we might get a boost in solar flux when some regions rotate back into Earth view. So if you can just hang out till then, things might actually improve and get us back up into marginal conditions. And you GPS operators, you should be in the clear as long as you stay clear of that aurora. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
There you go. You want to know what's really going on with the sun? Don't watch what's going on the news because they don't know. Go to the person who knows, Dr. Tamitha Scove, the voice of reason in this case. She's not going to hype it up when there's no need to hype it up. So follow her on Twitter, at Tamitha Scove. You really should. If you don't, you really should be following her on Twitter because everything that happens on the sun affects everything on the planet, including our hobby and avocation of ham radio. So definitely follow her on Twitter, at Tamitha Scove. So glad to have her on our team. George is coming up next with Smoke and Solder, and we'll have that right after this word from ICOM.
Advanced technology for advanced communications. Communicating has never been more fun than with ICOM. From D-Star to SDR, ICOM uses the most advanced technology in their radios. The SDR you've been asking for is here. ICOM's new IC7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF Direct Sampling System, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Whether you're looking to enter the world of D-Star or need a backup D-Star portable for your Go kit, the ID31A Plus is the perfect radio. easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide communications, share pictures and text messages, and it's IPX waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. Find out more about all the great new ICOM radios. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today.
And you can tune in and enter to win. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for February, that new radio is the ID51A Plus 2 VHF, UHF, D-Star Portable, extended D-Star coverage, terminal mode, access point mode. You can send and receive pictures or text messages. Set the transceiver's DR function from the RSMS-1A application or a map application. See the location of repeater sites or other DPRS stations on the map app. View and export received history of the transceiver. View detailed data of the transceiver's repeater list. And, of course, you can import and export the repeater list and the call sign list from or to the transceiver. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. After this and each episode of Ham Nation, sign up and register to win. Good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And now, you know, I was thinking this week, what could I show tonight? You know, people like to build stuff, and we haven't built anything recently. Everybody needs a tuner. Well, let me take that back. A lot of people need tuners. They allow you to operate different antennas with a little more bandwidth than you'd get with the antenna itself. Of course, a resonant antenna is always best, but it's not always possible. So here's a little tuner kit that I took a look at and built back in 2013. It's a fun project. It's inexpensive. If you haven't built anything before, you're getting into HF, this would be a perfect first project for you.
This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to begin building an HF antenna tuner. It's the MFJ VersaTuner 2, model MFJ941EK. The first thing we need to do is go over the parts inventory, check them off here as we go, and make sure that we've got all the parts here necessary to put this kit together. Now I've sorted all my parts and checked them off on the checklist, it's time to move on to the first stage. We've got 5 resistors to install first. Now I'll solder all these. We'll clip off all the leads. So now we've got 4 50 kΩ tremor pots, and we're going to install those as our 5, 6, 7, and 8. Now we've got 4 ceramic disc capacitors to install. Now we'll find C4, which is a tremor capacitor. Now let's solder all these in place before we move on. And now we'll use a 680 microhenry choke, which looks like a resistor, except in this kit the body is green. And now we'll find the 2 Schottky diodes. In my kit, they're both blue. They're the only 2 diodes in the kit. And we got to identify the cathode end. That's the end here that's got the black band on it. And we'll install D1 and D2 in the board, making sure that we've got the cathode in the direction of the arrow. Next, we're going to install some switches and the power jack. First, we'll install the double-pole, double-throw push-button switch, which has 6 pins on it here. That will go into the switch 1 position. And the other one, which is a 4-pole double-throw, has 12 pins. That will be switch 2. And we'll do the power jack as well. Now we've got the final switch to install, and this is an 8-pole double-throw rotary switch. Now the next instructions call for finding 6
pre-stripped 5-inch lengths of jacketed hookup wire. That means with insulation on them. Now, how am I going to hold these three wires in while I solder them? I think I'll just put a little piece of tape on there and see if that works. Now we install the red wire at the position marked LMP behind S1. And the violet wire will go into the one named FMTR. And the white wire will go into RMTR. Now let's see if we can hold the wire in the solder with one hand and the soldering iron with the other. Now we're going to install T2, which will be the SWR transformer. We'll use this little brass eyelet here, put it through the T2 position and solder it to the board. Then we'll take one of the lengths of bus wire here, put it through there. Now we'll take T2 in this position. This is a smaller toroid in the kit. One wire is red here, the other is more of an amber color, and then the two in the center here are twisted together. So what we're going to want to do is put those into the three holes here in that order after we've slid this down over the wire and the eyelet. Now once we've got that in position, we'll take the little nylon washer and slide down over the top. And we'll hope it stays there. Now we'll find six additional bus wires here, and we'll install them at positions DL, wire, coax 2, coax 1, and C2. Now on the wire on the inside at position DL here, that one needs to loop through up to the switch. Now this completes the PC board part of the kit here. There are some positions here that aren't used because this same PC board is used in a number of different model tuners. Now our next step here is to mount the printed circuit board inside of the chassis. It'll go like this. Now the next step will be to mount the coax connectors in the rear here, and the connectors mount from the inside. Now we need to route these bus wires to the back of the connectors. We'll take the one that says coax 1, and that'll run to connector coax 1 here. The one that says coax 2 goes to the coax 2 connector. The connector that says transmitter has the one labeled as T2, this one right here. And then the last one labeled dummy load is the wire labeled dummy load right here. And now we'll solder all of these in place. Let's install the ground post, which is going to go down here. Now we'll install the two banana terminals here. Actually, there's three of them. Now, the one labeled wire here, we're going to take the lead here that's marked wire and connect it to there. And I'm going to try to come under this one right here. Make sure those don't touch. And now for the balance line, we're going to install our larger ballon here. And now the two leads that are twisted together here, those will go to our ground terminal on the bottom. And now we've got a white lead and a black lead left. Those will go to the two balance posts here. And now it's time to mount our meter. And now we'll take the capacitors and put them across the terminals of each of the meter movements here. And we'll also put one across the lamp assembly. Now we'll install one of the black wires to each negative terminal of the meter. We'll also install a black wire to one of the meter lamp terminals. Now we'll connect the violet wire to the positive lead of the forward power meter. You see, forward's on this side, but the movement is actually down here on this side. The white wire goes to the positive terminal over here on the reflected movement. And the red wire here will go to the opposite side of the lamp.
The red zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the white zone.
No, the white zone is for loading and unloading, and there is no stopping in the red zone.
The red zone has always been for loading and unloading. There is never stopping in a white zone.
Don't tell me which zone is for stopping and which zone is for loading.
Listen, Betty, don't start off with your white zone fish again.
This completes the RF switching and metering sections of the kit. Next week, we'll return and build the T-Network. If you'd like to build along with us, visit mfjenterprises.com and order MFJ941EK.
And that is a fun, simple little effective tuner. I ended up giving that one to my son. He became a ham just so shortly after the time I built that, I guess. And he's put it to use out in Houston, Texas. So great for, you know, 300 watts or less, which, of course, practically all HF radios are. The MFJ941EK. And, you know, they kind of put that together special for us because I had asked Richard at MFJ to help us get some kits together. That is one of them there. Another is a 4-to-1 Ballon kit that they produced at our request. So go check that out. We'll be back next week. I'm going to finish building it and see what we do next. And then after that, we're going to test it out. And it's some interesting tips on how you test that, how you set it up. Well, last week I asked a question here, and everyone should have known the answer, and I think just about everybody did. The question was, who is the Hamvention Amateur of the Year for 2018? And, of course, we all know that it was Val NV9L. Well, Carl Coachman, N9IBN, got his number picked out of the entries I received there. And he's going to win the MFJ 270 Guardian Angel Surge Suppressor. Nice little surge suppressor to go in line with your coax. This one has SO239 to fit your PL259 connectors. It's a gas block surge suppressor. And this particular one is good from DC to 1 gigahertz, very low insertion loss, and you can put up to 400 watts PEP through it. Of course, they got another model that you can do 1,500 watts PEP with. So MFJ Guardian Angel Surge Suppressor, recommended to help keep down lightning and static damage to your rig. Of course, nothing is as good as disconnecting the antenna. This certainly doesn't help, certainly doesn't hurt, though. All right, for next week, I've got another question. I'm going to take it out of Gordo's book here. It's his extra amateur radio study guide for 2016 through 2020. And I know there's a lot of you out there that probably need to get this book right here. Your generals, it's time. Do a little studying. Go ahead and upgrade to extra. Get those extra privileges there. I've got a question here, Gordo flagged specially for us. What type of semiconductor device is designed for use as a voltage control capacitor? Is it a variactor diode, a tunnel diode, a silicon control rectifier, or a Zener diode? What type of semiconductor device is designed for use as a voltage control capacitor? If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might be next week's lucky winner. Well, Gordo is here tonight, so I'm not going to give away his book. Bob is not here, so I'm going to give away one of his. It's the Heil Ham Radio Handbook, second edition, produced by our faithful and fearless leader, Bob Heil, K9EID. This is a really good book. Got a lot of good information in there. This is the second edition. He did this, I don't remember the year right off, but the second edition here, 2013. The first edition was published in 1978. So it went through a few revisions here, some extra information. But, you know, really, none of the old stuff that was in there is outdated because, physics doesn't change that much. And neither does the way radio waves propagate through the air. The Howl Ham Radio Handbook, thanks to Bob and Sarah for making this available. We're going to give that away to somebody. And now it's time for, well, what is it time for next, Don?
Well, I think we're going to talk a little bit about DX engineering. That's what we're going to talk about. And it's quite topical that you brought up the lightning protection because, well, we're getting into summer thunderstorm season. And it's the perfect time to go out and do a little refurb, a little refresh on your towers. And DX Engineering carries towers and accessories to make sure that your antenna system is ready for Mother Nature. You need a new tower? You can easily erect a new one or fix the one you have with products from American Tower Company and Roan. DX Engineering carries the entire line of American Tower products, including a wide range of sections, bases, brackets, and accessories. Depending on the antenna you're using, Amorite towers work well in self-supported guide or bracketed installations. Every section is hot-dip galvanized. It gives you superior corrosion resistance. Then they're double-bolted to give you an extra strong junction between sections. Roan, probably the first name in towers, and DX Engineering is an authorized Roan distributor, so you get access to the entire Roan line, 45G, 55G, and the workhorse 25G. DX Engineering carries genuine Roan accessories, guying hardware, work platforms, anchor rods, everything that Roan has, DX Engineering carries. You can also get TBX tower accessories, like tower sections, bases, and hardwares at DX Engineering. Roan TBX and American Tower products available separately or in handy prepackaged kits. Eliminate a lot of the component matching guesswork, along with handy repair and replacement parts for your existing tower. And if you're trying to securely mount a cross member to a tower face, DX Engineering's Genius clamps are an excellent option. Hundreds of uses, literally hundreds, any place you need to accommodate 1 to 2 inch OD tubing clamped at right angles or parallel. You can also visit dxengineering.com for other tower accessories and mounting solutions, including lightning rods, replacement hardware, and like George mentioned, those lightning arresters. Those are handy. Ask me how I know. Or better yet, don't. I'm trying to block that out of my memory. DX Engineering's advanced design thrust bearings have two key benefits over a standard design as well. The ball bearings ride on an all-metal surface, not a seam like other thrust bearings. This gives you a longer service life. It can handle greater loads than other models, which reduces stress on the rotator, allows rotator service without having to remove the antenna. And advanced design thrust bearings fit 2 and 3 inch OD mast in most common tower sizes. So no matter what you're doing up on your tower with your antenna, DX Engineering has you covered. And, of course, DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7, 365, dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation, and we thank them so much for their support of Ham Nation. Before we get into the chat room with Amanda, we have a quick little viewer video. Paul Fry, K9PTF, visited the Hamfest in Birmingham, Alabama recently, and he sent us this video.
This is K9PTF Paul in Chelsea, Alabama, and today we're mobile and off to the Birmingham Hamfest at the Samora Temple in Irondale, Alabama. Mother Nature decided to put on a show, too, with flowering trees and sunshine for both days. This year, I decided to help out as a volunteer for the special event station that would be operating from the Hamfest. If you get a chance, you should try helping out at your local Hamfest. You'll get a view of all the hard work that goes into making a successful Hamfest. Vendors and staff work very hard so attendees can have a good experience. Agendas must be set, and forums need equipment set up and checked. Vendors have to prep everything, so you'll be able to find what you want and at a good price. We had vendors from Alabama as well as from out of state, all of which were there to get your business. The special event station, AL2C, for the Bicentennial of Alabama was working HF and D-Star. They were giving attending hams a chance to be an operator of the station and call CQ. A bit of advice. Don't have your HF special event at the same time there is a contest. We couldn't find an opening on 20 meters on Saturday. Oh well, live and learn. The door prize barrel is always busy,
And the grand prize this year was an ICOM IC7300. You never know who or what you'll find at a ham fest. The Alabama Historical Radio Society had a German Enigma machine that they brought to a forum. Different areas of ham radio were in force, Aries and ARRL, to name a few. The flea market had lots to see and buy, and all too soon it was time to leave. So thanks to all those who came and made our ham fest a success, and 73.
Good stuff, Paul. Paul Fry, K9 PTF. Great guy. Met him at the MFJ open house last year. Just a cool guy. Sat and talked with us for a long time while we were hanging out with Ted Randall on WTWW. By the way, you can hear us tonight on WTWW. We've been on all night on 5085 and 12.105. And last night, we resumed the second Tuesday program with me and Ted for a couple of hours. So if you missed that last night on WTWW, go to the website, WTWW.us or QSO Radio Show. Just Google that. And I think you can find a replay. I believe you can. And you can also listen live online. And if you want to email Ted, email it to email@WTWW.us with song requests or any kind of request and dedication, any kind of ham radio in for ham radio stuff you've got. Go ahead and send that to Ted. Great folks over there at WTWW. We thank them for their support. Amanda, what's going on in the chat room tonight with your green whatever it is you got on your head there?
It's a tiara. Tiara. Okay.
I'm a guy. I don't do tiaras, Amanda. You know that.
But it's what all of us women want to wear every day. All right. First thing is first. This is for George. Happy birthday.
Birthday, dear George
Thomas. Happy birthday to you
and many more.
It was yesterday, wow. But happy birthday, George.
Happy birthday.
I really wish Bob was here because he would have played an awesome organ tune of happy birthday, but this is what you get, George. You're stuck with us. I'm sorry.
Where my birthday.
Amanda, yeah. Amanda, bulletin, Bob Heil is going to be the Visalia DX convention. He's going to play the big organ at right across the street from where the convention is held. So, wow, pretty neat, huh? We'll hear him in action in a few more weeks.
That's actually very awesome. And Don, you had brought up lightning arresters. And so I yelled at Jeff. I'm yelling in the background. I'm sure Victor gets a real kick out of seeing me in the behind the scenes. Anyhow, I'm yelling and I'm like, Jeff, find me a lightning arrester. Find me a lightning arrester. I wanted to show one off to you guys. We don't have one for our repeaters because they're all actually in use. But I thought I'd just show this. This is an Ethernet lightning arrester that we use in several locations as well, because when repeaters go up, not only do you use hardline and stuff like that, but you also usually have routers and such involved as well. So anyhow, it is that time of year. And I'm going to say this again. I think I said this, and I'm sorry I wasn't here last week. I wasn't feeling well. Thanks, everyone, for covering for me. Let's talk about lightning a little bit more. And what else goes along with lightning is severe weather. You guys, go out there, take your Skywarn training again. Do it. If you did it online, go to a real-life class. It really helps out a lot to get some explanation. Not only that, you get to meet a lot of your other spotters in your area, and it helps you meet up with the NWS and you get familiar with them as well. So do that. Look for the dates and times. I'm sure in the Midwest, it's probably earlier than when it is here in Colorado, but get that under your belt. It really helps. Those spotters in a lot of rural areas especially, they would love to have those hail reports for sure. Rain, how much it is raining, how much you have. And snow. They like to have your snow records as well, but do it. All right. That being said, I was going to go over a few other things here, but I think I'm going to go right to questions and such. We had some pretty good ones tonight. Gordo, now this question came up 2 weeks ago when you couldn't join us here at the end, and we know that you are a packet expert. So I'm going to ask you, Gordo, what is your packet setup give us everything from your TNC to the radio that you use with it to the interface on your laptop or what have you. Give it to us.
My packet setup is a Kenwood D72 that has the built-in TNC, and I can short message on that or tie that rig into my laptop and do a little bit of packet. So I'm a little bit of on packet, but I'm more packet doing APRS as well as doing APRS through the International Space Station, although their system on 145.825 has been down. I'll have to check and see if it's back up. So I'm on a packet a little bit, but I'm overexposed, so I'm sort of hiding out doing a lot of monitoring.
Well, very good. That helps us a lot. And George, I have a couple questions for you. The first one was from Tom in for HAI. He says, can you load up on an NFED half wave with the MFJ tuner that you built?
I believe you can. It had a, well, I take that back. I don't know for sure. There was a balance line output on it. I don't know if you could use that for an NFED antenna or not. Without looking at the documentation, I really don't know. I think you can, but I'm just not sure.
I bet if you went on MFJ.com and found looked up the model number for that, you could probably download the manual and it would tell you.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, look what I found. I found a lightning arrest.
Ah, there you go.
It is unused.
I wanted it at a ham fest. It's from Morgan Manufacturing. It's a VHF UHF 40 to 1,000 megahertz kilowatt PEP. So there you go. Need to put that in line one of these days, don't I?
You might.
You might want to get on that.
Yeah, I might want to get on that. Yeah.
Get on that. Okay. I have a couple other ones here. This one's another Gordo question. Gordo, Dave, KJ4CMY wants to know, at CourtFest, how did the Predator generator compare to the Honda generators?
We found that all of the generators did a great job of developing the rated voltage and the amount of wattage that was advertised. And we later discovered that the noisy generators were those that were ungrounded. And the Predator, once we made sure it was grounded, and the Hondas, once we made sure it was well grounded, and a three-wire ground plug, so the thing didn't act like an antenna, they all did equally well. But the Predators, which is a fairly common one that you see at discount houses, did an admirable job. And it was no more noisy than the Hondas, but there were some that came in with some strange names from overseas, and even though they were well grounded, they were pretty noisy on the HF bands, but not the Predator, not the Honda. They were nice and quiet.
Oh, you can't go wrong with those Hondas. I'll tell you what, those are always nice to have at your field day locations for sure. let's see. I've got a couple of announcements for a new ham and an upgraded ham. Mickey, NY2MC, wants us to give a shout out to his 11-year-old daughter, Jenny, who just got her tech ticket last weekend. Her call is KD2PHH. Jenny, congratulations. And we can't Woo-hoo! Wait for you to get on the air. And your first contacts, if you haven't already made them, are going to be very, very memorable. So, and I think you probably have a good Elmer there with you. Then this other one, and Don, you know who this is. This is Leah, W3LEO. She just upgraded to Extra. And I tell you,
Yay!
I think she did it. I passed. I think it was quite a challenge. I know it was for me. And she was really, really happy to finally pass that. So, Leah, you get on there, girl, and you make some DX contacts. And I hope you really enjoy your new privileges. I know I did when I upgraded, as most of us did. All right. Another announcement we have is a ham fest. I'm looking at my notes here. Scottsdale is having a ham fest this Saturday, and that's the Scottsdale ARC. So Google that if you're around the area. Check it out. Of course, it's probably already 100 degrees there because it's Scottsdale. Let's see if I'm missing anything here. We got the birthday out of the way. I One more thing. New Zealand is trying to put their first sat in the air. This is awesome, and I can't wait to find out more information. But Simon just told us that, and it's the KiwiSat from New Zealand, and it's going to be their first ham satellite. So when that gets up, you guys, that's going to be a popular bird. Trust me. With that, let's see. I've got some net announcements. I have 3908 for the 75 meter net. Steve's going to host that tonight, W7UDI. Kevin, I haven't seen your frequency on chat yet. Just start putting it out there. We'll catch it. D Star, we have 14 Charlie, of course. A couple weeks ago, they were having some pretty bad packet loss. So be patient. And I think it's because we have so many people joining at one time. Sometimes it's a little rough, but hopefully it'll be okay this week. And Echolink, we have the Dewdrop in. And DMR, we have TAC 311. So you've got multiple choices, and I'm still looking. I'm not seeing the 40-meter frequency. Anyone? Bueller?
I saw it somewhere. Did you? I thought I did. I thought I saw it. Somebody will pop in with it real quick. I'm going to change my hat. This is a Mardi Gras hat, and I wore it because it has green on it. And then I remembered I have something a little more appropriate. I have this, so let's put this one on. Let's be a little bit. There we go. Now I'm all ready for St. Patrick's Day.
There you go. Hey, how massive is your hat collection?
Oh, it's huge. I have a mountain of hats over there. It's horrible. Well, that's because the reason, and my wife, it's much to the chagrin of my wife, because, you know, before I lost a lot of weight, I was 360 pounds and higher, and I couldn't find a t-shirt, you know, souvenir t-shirt somewhere in my size necessarily, but I could always find a hat. And so I got hooked on hats, but I have a ton of hats. And speaking of St. Patrick's Day, which is coming up this weekend, St. Patrick's Day is kind of an anniversary for my wife, Dawn, and I, because it was in St. Patrick's Day in 1984 that we actually first met face to face after talking on the phone. She called me on the request line. Actually, her friend called me at the radio station on the request line my first night on the radio in New Orleans to mess with another disc jockey, and ended up talking to me because she was over at her friend Dawn's house and found out my name was Dawn, and like, oh, it's funny. Dawn and Don, wouldn't it be funny if they got together? 34 years later, here we are. But so St. Patrick's Day is the first, after talking on the phone for about a month and a half, is the first time that we actually met face to face. So we celebrate that as an anniversary. So love you, baby. There you go.
Oh, that is the sweetest thing. And my sister and her husband met during March Madness, betting against each other on brackets. So it kind of reminds me of that. But
there you go.
It's
whatever
so
works.
Cute when you have those awesome stories like that. I love to hear those. And all right, update on 40 meters at 71.97 tonight. So
there you go.
Get on the air and make some contacts and have some fun. I think it was a great show.
It was, in spite of me being on it. Hey, somebody in the chat room mentioned one of my favorite YouTube channels, AVE. Who doesn't like AVE? Well, I love AVE, as you can. Yeah, I've got one of these. I'm trying to cover the naughty word. You know the naughty word on here. So I've got it. It has a light on it. Look, the light works. This is cool. Neat little ruler, and it has a picture and a naughty word on it. So I have to be careful what I show online. So yeah, shout out to AVE. If you don't watch AVE on YouTube, there's something wrong with it. I don't want you in the house. That's about it, George. Any final words for us tonight?
Midland Amateur Radio. Oh, I'm sorry, George. Midland Amateur Radio Club is having its convention this Saturday, and that'll be a good one for Texas. So, Midland, we'll talk to you on Skype. And now, here's George. Sorry, George, I missed my cue.
Well, I just want to say I had a great time this past weekend at Rain, Louisiana, at the Arcadiana Hamfest there. A great time. Some of the friendliest folks in the world. A lot friendlier than you guys even. I just couldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah. I gotta teach you how to say Acadia, though. Acadiana. There's no R in Acadiana. And I heard somebody else who was there, Jason from Texas. He has a YouTube show. He was pronouncing it every, he was pronouncing it like seven different ways of wrong. So Acadiana, the Acadiana Amateur Radio Association. So there you go. The Cajuns. That's where the word Cajun comes from. Acadiana. Acadian, you know, Cajun. That's where that word comes from.
At least we had email with us. He taught us how to eat crawfish properly.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, he's
benching tails and sucking heads, and that's all I can say about it.
You know? Yeah, he ain't no rookie. No. Yeah, Emil ain't no rookie. That's for sure. Take a look at him. You can tell. He ain't no rookie. All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for us tonight, everybody. Yeah, Jason, Ham Radio 2.0. He was there at the Ham Fest. So there you go. And so shout out to him, and shout out to AVE. Check him out. Funny, funny, funny. A little rough on the language, but funny, funny, funny. So I guess that'll do it for us tonight. Hopefully we'll see if we can get Mr. Heil, Dr. Heil, back in here next week after he's done doing his whatever it is he does, his Heiling. But we shall wish you all adieu. We shall wish you all a happy St. Patrick's Day. And be safe. And whatever you do this week and the weekend, enjoy yourself. And we'll see you again next Wednesday night here on most of this same Twitch channel. So for the assembled throng, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, and I bid you a fond good night and adieu. Bop,